welcome to yet another episode of the Foodie Flashback, the podcast where we talk with international guests sometimes and with guests from like all walks of life about their connection to food, their like how they grew up and like the stories behind the food and like what makes whatever food they grew up with or like what makes that special. Today I have a very special guest, at least in my book, someone who was very high on my list when I set out like, hey, I'm going to do this. Like there were a couple of people that I definitely wanted to talk to and that I thought would have great stories. And we've been on podcasts quite a lot. So I have with me Chuck Joyner. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Patrice. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, as I said, like, it was definitely, like, you were someone I definitely did want to talk to. I mean, we've been on a couple of podcasts. I've listened to, like, Track Favorites, for example, which I'm going to admit was kind of the inspiration for this show. Like, that's how I started.
Oh, I'm flattered. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was literally, I saw the show or listened to the show and I was like, okay, I like this format. I like this whole favorites thing. And it just morphed into Foodie Flashback ultimately because I didn't want to do TV shows. Like there are too many podcasts like that. I wanted to do something food related and somehow I kind of moved away from the whole favorites thing more to the stories thing, but it was also something that I always was very interested in anyway. So yeah, you're the literal inspiration for this even existing.
Well, how can you go wrong with food?
That's absolutely true. Yeah, but I didn't want to do favorite foods either because like I thought that would just end up in a fight. Like one person would say, oh, my favorite food is, I don't know, New York pizza. And then someone else would say, no, it's Chicago pizza. Like, I didn't want to do that. So, yeah, I made it about the stories. So maybe, like, can you share a little bit where you're from, like in case someone absolutely doesn't know you, which I kind of doubt.
Well, I don't know about that. No, I grew up in a small town in southern, south central Pennsylvania, right next to the Maryland line. Mm-hmm. And my mom was from Pennsylvania. My dad mm-hmm. was from Georgia. So there was a bit of a mixture going on there from the northern cuisine and the southern cuisine, mm-hmm. if we're going to talk about food. And so I've learned to appreciate some things from both sides, some things that, you know, I don't think my mom ever really quite got used to that from where my dad grew up and mm-hmm. vice versa. So, you know, it, and I don't think I really became interested. I mean, obviously, you know, you love food, but I don't think I really became interested mm-hmm. in cooking and everything until a lot later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, growing, but when you've contacted me about this, it sort of made me think back and think about, okay, what did I enjoy as a kid? Mm-hmm. And it brought back a lot of memories, you know, of that those cultural differences.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're definitely going to dive into that. And nowadays, I mean, I know you're as a podcaster. You have, as we already mentioned, at least one more podcast. Actually, well, I know about two more podcasts. There is Track Favorites. The other one, I'm blanking on the name. Mac Voices, right?
Yeah, Mac Voices.
Mac Voices, yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing Mac Voices for, it's coming up on 15 years.
Wow.
And so, so I've been doing that for a while, and Trek Favorites came out of the idea that on so many of Mac Voices episodes during the taping and before and after, some Star Trek reference would come up. It's kind of a cultural touchstone.
Yeah, it is.
And you started having these, you know, these kind of on the side conversations. And it's like, mm-hmm. you know what? I really want to have some of these conversations with my friends mm-hmm. about, you know, but like, just like you were saying, you know, there's so many podcasts out there. And the one thing that I didn't see is I didn't see anybody talking. They do analysis and dig into the messages mm-hmm. and all that. Mm-hmm. But there was nobody just saying, hey, you know, what do you – pick an episode that you like. I don't care why you liked it. Just, you know, mm-hmm. explain why you liked it. And it's led to some very surprising and unusual conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely, like, there were quite a few surprises. Like, it's not like everybody likes the same, like, handful episodes. Like, everybody has a different approach and a different perspective on, like, Star Trek and, like, what shows they even like, which versions, which episodes, like which characters. Like everybody has a different approach. So like I said, that was for me super interesting, and I always love like listening to that. Like I listen to the other shows as well. I definitely listen to like a Random Track, for example, and Mission Log and so on. But yeah, I really like this is my favorite, and here's why. Aspect, and it doesn't have to be the favorite, the top, like absolute. It has to be a favorite. It can be a favorite. So I really enjoyed that.
Well, just like you were saying, how do you pick a favorite over? I've lost track, but I think it's well over 500 episodes. You know, how do you say this is the one that I really like out of all the Trek series and everything? It's just impossible. And so idea was, and I don't want to talk about my favorites. You know, I want to hear about the guest. Mm-hmm. And to what you were saying, I mean, right out of the gate, I got some where some guests would pick an episode and I'd like, that one? Really? That's one of your favorites? Mm-hmm. And then we'd get into the discussion, and there was something about that touched them and their lives, or where they were at that point in their lives, that really just, it kind of blew me away. It's like, okay, this is working out better than I ever thought it would, because I really didn't expect. And now they've caused me to go back and look at some of those episodes that maybe were, you know, okay, in a completely different light. Mm-hmm. Completely different
light. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing with Foodie Flashback. Like, I've been on so many podcasts where it's about my opinion or like what is happening in tech and how do I see it and all of that. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to do something where it's absolutely about the guests. Like, you today, where it's about their stories and their experience, and I might interject something that comes up from my like my past and something I see maybe across episodes, but it is literally about like the guests and like how they approach food and how they grew up and how like what the stories are. So yeah, it's exactly that. So speaking about food, what's your definition of a foodie? And like, would you consider yourself one?
I consider myself a foodie from the standpoint that I enjoy food. I'm not one of those people that just eats to eat. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, unless it's, you know, during the workday and you got to get something because you've got to get to the next meeting. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, you know, I like to think that I'm a little more intentional. And certainly if I have a choice to go out to dinner or, you know, go if I'm traveling, you know, I don't want to just stop at a chain restaurant. I'd much rather sample something that is local or regional and enjoy the cuisine of that area. That said, you know, there are times depending on where you go that the cuisine that you enjoy may not be part of that area, but there's a really good restaurant that serves it. Mm-hmm. And so I do pay attention, and I do like to try new things, like probably everyone else. But I haven't gotten to the point where I'm going to eat something that just is completely off the wall. That's like, all right, it needs to appeal to me. You know, it needs to have some appeal. But you know, that said, I like to think I'm pretty broad minded and will try just about anything at least once.
Mm-hmm. So do you, like, if you travel, do you actively seek out like the local cuisine, like the smaller, maybe even the smaller local restaurants that the locals go to? Or is it more like a mix between like restaurants that sound interesting, even if they're not typical local, versus like, as at local restaurants?
That's a great question. I'd say I probably a mix. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think there's always this temptation to look for the most highly recommended restaurants in a city. And sometimes those are very much local, and sometimes they are, you know, they might be by a quote unquote celebrity chef, but that has a restaurant in that area. So it's kind of all over the place for me. You know, just again, it's what appeals. I'm not going to go just because you open a restaurant in, you know, the city I'm in. I'm not necessarily going to go, but if it's a cuisine that I like or it sounds interesting, yeah, then absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So it probably also depends on the situation. Like, it's probably like even maybe a little bit mood based, where it's like sometimes you're in the mood for something completely different, something new. And sometimes you're like, well, like I just want something that somehow feels familiar, right?
Oh, sure. Sure. I mean, it is interesting if you go somewhere and you tend to to overdose on that cuisine. And then you can't wait to get back or, you know, you come home and you get back to something that's a little more familiar. And it's like, oh, you know, this is the way it really should be. This is what I really, really enjoyed this, but I enjoyed the other two.
Yeah. But what I found is, especially after traveling for a while, if you're traveling a lot, you sometimes just want to go back to something familiar. Like you come back home and like you don't want something crazy, like extraordinary. You just want something sometimes simple and something that you're familiar with and that just feels like home, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, and food is such a touch point again for home, whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. You know, food's probably involved to one degree or another.
Yeah, that's definitely something I've seen for a lot of people. So you said that you like grew up in southern Pennsylvania. Can you describe like for someone who doesn't know like what the typical cuisine would be, like how would you describe that?
You know, Pennsylvania is interesting, and at least the area where I grew up, there are not a lot of foods that I would say are native to that area, with the exception of the Pennsylvania Dutch cooking. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of very heavy food, and with some of that old German influence, like sauerkraut was always in our home. Mm-hmm. And it took a little while, but I developed a taste for that. And now really thoroughly enjoy it. Mm-hmm. There's some others, you know, like that maybe not so much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's Pennsylvania, I don't think other than if you go to Philadelphia and, of course, the Philadelphia cheesesteaks, you go to Pittsburgh and some of their sandwiches. We really don't have a defining cuisine, I don't think. Mm-hmm. And if anybody's found one, let me know because I'd love to find it. But it's sort of a mixture. I mean, where I grew up and where I live now, we're not that far from the Chesapeake Bay and Maryland. So blue crabs are very much a big thing. Mm-hmm. They weren't as much when I was a kid, but you know, now I've really come to appreciate them and absolutely love love crab in just about any form.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, based on, as you said, like the Dutch, German, like influences, a lot of meat and potatoes or like something like that, sauerkraut, obviously you mentioned.
A lot of meat and potatoes.
Sounds like Germany. That's what I usually say about Germany. What is like food in Germany? Meat and potatoes.
exactly. You know.
Yeah. But I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I mean, it's good.
But once you start to break out and realize that there's more to the world than meat and potatoes, it becomes a lot more fun.
Was that something that you experienced in your childhood, like other cuisines? Was that something that was around, or was it really more like, you know, I want to say traditional Pennsylvania now, like more like local food?
You know, my mom was very much into experimenting with cooking. Mm-hmm. She was part of what they called back then, or they termed themselves, an international cooking group. And, you know, she would bring home some dishes to try. And sometimes it's like, what is this? And other times like, yeah, this is bad. You know, I'm not sure I want to make a steady diet of it. Those were some of my first exposures to things. And I probably, again, I don't think I was as welcoming to those things as maybe I could have been. But again, when you're a kid, you know, you're not quite into that. So
no, like kids in general, like it's like, it depends a little bit. Like some kids are different, but for the most part, like they're not the most adventurous usually. So what kind of food did your mom experiment with? Like, do you remember anything particular?
Oh no, I'd be lying if I told you that I did. You know, I remember, you know, her talking about what, you know, and I'm sorry now that I wasn't paying a little more attention to that, because I think it would have been interesting to compare my taste now with you know, what she was trying to do then. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish I could tell you, but, you know, lost the time.
Well, I mean, it happens. Like, I mean, if you ask me, I would have a, I mean, other than my dad's pasta, I would probably have a hard time remembering it as well. Like, it's just too long ago. Where did she get the inspiration from? Was it like something she read, or like, how did she get exposed to that? Do you know that?
My mom was, she was an amazing lady. She was kind of ahead of her time in so many ways, but I think she did a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. She did a lot of, you know, I mean, all the cooking magazines, everything. She loved to experiment and try. Mm-hmm. And again, as a kid, you know, it's like, okay, another one of these experiments. I'm not so sure about this. But yeah, so I think that she was just, I think she was curious about it now, then, like I probably am now, mm-hmm. or, you know, got curious and as I grew up, mm-hmm. about, you know, what is this like? What's that like? Well, let's try it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I grew up that, and again, I eventually, I think, absorbed that, mm-hmm. once, you know, I got away from home and started doing things, you know, on my terms. Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, you know, this is good, but it amazes me sometimes if you just travel 2 or 3 hours from home.
Oh, yeah.
There can be a completely different set of rules for what is, I hesitate to say normal, mm-hmm. but, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it doesn't even take that long. Like, sometimes you can, like, go to the next city over and it's completely different. Like, it just depends on where you are. Like,
yeah.
So something I experienced in Italy, for example, like every small village has their own like food and their own words and their own like culture almost. And I've seen that happening in the US as well. Like, it just depends on where you're around. So
yeah. And two, you know, if you go to a particular region, just because you're in that region and, mm. and they have a cuisine, I mean, there are a million. Well, Italy and Italian food is a great example. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different variations on Italian food. Mm-hmm. You know, we cast that big umbrella of Italian food, and there's so many things within that are so radically different that you really have to mm-hmm. evaluate each kind of dish, which just makes it a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, it definitely does. So your mom, like, she was like cooking from scratch more, or was it like a mix between like cooking from scratch and whatever frozen food or TV dinners, anything like that?
No, it was pretty much at that time cooking from scratch. Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
cooking from scratch.
I don't know how big your family is. Was it just you? Was it like a bigger family?
It was just my mom, my dad, my sister, and I.
Mm-hmm. Oh well, I mean, still decent sized family. Yeah. So I mean that's something I've discovered. Like it really sometimes depends on like how big the family was, like how much cooking really happened. I talked to Tom, for example, and I mean he's the youngest of I think 10 or 9 or something. So yeah, I mean if you're cooking for 10 people, then it's a different kind of cooking and different requirements than if you can cook for like a smaller family. So that sometimes influences like what type of food you get exposed to. Like it's also like a financial issue sometimes.
A financial issue and just the sheer volume of preparation.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly. where my mom, you know, might have had to make, you know, mm-hmm. 5 or 6 eggs. If you got 10 people, you're probably cooking up a couple dozen.
Yeah,
and so exactly. You know, the whole dynamic changes.
Yeah. Did you cook with your mom ever, or was that more like she would cook and you would be doing something else? Like,
that was more, I mean, maybe a little bit, but that was more a little more of the traditional role. You know, my mm-hmm. sisters probably spent a lot more time cooking with mm-hmm. my mom. I would help grill with my dad, you know, steaks on the grill or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't become interested in cooking, frankly, until my mom got sick. And then, you know, I started trying to pick up, along with my sister, we picked up, you know, the mm-hmm. cooking experiences. Mm-hmm. And my sister was a lot farther ahead of me then, but, and she probably still is, let's be fair about it. You know, I don't, she'll hear this and then I'll get in trouble, but no, she is much more, able to pull things together. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy throwing things in a pot and seeing what happens, and or throwing it in a crock pot or throwing it mm-hmm. in the roaster and mm-hmm. see what comes out.
Did you start out that way? Like more like, as you said, it sounds almost experimental, like throwing things together and seeing what happens. Or was that
well,
more?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, within reasonable bounds, you mm-hmm. know, but yeah, I mean, okay, so you want to make a pot roast. Okay, so how tough can this be? So you look up a few things and, mm-hmm. you know, then you learn, okay, that you throw the carrots in and they add a little flavor. You throw some onion in, it adds a little flavor. You throw a couple other vegetables in and that changes the flavor. So yeah, there was that kind of simple experimentation. Mm-hmm. But you just start to get a feel for, you know, maybe what you like or what you think works or works for you and the people you're cooking for, if you're cooking for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's kind of how I cook as well. Like, you just like look at the recipe or look at a couple of recipes and then come up with your own version of it. Basically, never really following anything. Sometimes it turns out great. Sometimes it doesn't.
Well, even now, you know, I mean, and the internet is mm-hmm. it's like, it's borderline dangerous because you look at something and somebody that, you know, they love this mm-hmm. and they tell you exactly how to make it. So you make it and it's like, okay, this may not be terrible, but I'm never going to do this again.
So true.
And yet, you know, they made it sound good and the photo looked good and all that. And so.
And it probably was good for them. Like, it was just not what you wanted, like what you expected.
Well, sure. And, you know, yeah. I don't, where you grew up and where I grew up, mm-hmm. you know, the cuisines are completely different. And mm-hmm. so what you think may be just phenomenal, I may think, oh, ooh, man, you know, okay, can't do that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah. So, I mean, as you said, like your sister was more cooking, your dad was more like maybe like doing the barbecue with you, right. which was probably not a daily thing, like more a like every once in a while thing, I'm guessing.
Yeah. 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 So like, more like a weekend or like you say, every other weekend kind of thing.
Or like a holiday, like if like 4th of July, like Memorial Day, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And like, then your mom got sick and like you had to pick up the slack somehow, right? That's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, that was when I really started paying a lot more attention up to that point. Yeah. You mess around a little bit, but you know, it's like, okay, somebody's got to start doing this. And I found out I enjoyed it, and I don't want to leave the impression here, false impressions that I was out there, you know, digging the vegetables out of the garden or anything, you know, cooking from scratch. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you kind of combine some of the pre-prepared stuff for things that you can do easily, and then put your own style to them or your own things, and you know, if you talk to my dad and my sister, you know, not everything worked, but you know, mm-hmm. again, it was always done with a vibe. I always just enjoyed it. It was mm-hmm. fun for me to try that and to pick up the slack where mm-hmm. somebody needed to.
Mm-hmm. How old were you at that point?
Boy, Patrice.
Roughly. I doesn't have to be exact.
Oh, man. 25, 20.
So mid-20s somewhere.
Yeah, maybe a little better than that. Mm-hmm. And I may be understating that greatly. That's one thing I'm not good at is years. Everything just sort of all comes together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
Yeah. Were you living at home still, or was that more like, you came back like you had left for school or something?
Yeah, I was actually working at the time and had come, you know, and then was coming home on weekends to try to help out.
To help out. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Do you remember like what you and your sister, like what the first things were that you started cooking, like not having too, especially on your side, not having too much experience?
I won't speak for my sister because she had a lot more experience through my mom. For me, I think the first things I started doing was, because it was almost bulletproof, you throw things in a crock pot and let them cook all day. And, you know, that, so the meat inevitably got done and was reasonably tender. You know, unless you have it on high for a long time, it's hard to burn anything in a crock pot.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was a great way to get started because, you know, you didn't have to do a huge amount of preparation and you got something back. So there was like this positive reinforcement. It's like, yeah, I can do this. You know, I can put the meat in there and throw everything and turn it on. And then, well, but if I do this or if I add this or if now maybe I'm ready to try something on my own over here. And it just progresses if you're inclined. If not, I'm sure it's a terrible chore for people that don't enjoy it.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I mean, definitely, yeah, crockpots are easy. I mean, you just basically need a couple minutes to kind of throw everything together, like cut it up, throw it together, add some sort of liquid, turn it on, and then leave it for a couple of hours at least. And yeah, that's relatively easy. It's also relatively cheap, and it doesn't really require much in time.
And to be fair, I mean, sometimes, you know, there's a bit of pre-preparation before you put it in the pot, and you're right. You can do just exactly what you said, or you can do some of the more elaborate things, and then you get away from, okay, I don't need the crock pot now. I'll use a roaster or a frying pan or something. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean by the progression. You know, you just, as long as you can get some positive reinforcement along the way that something does, at least something turns out that you enjoy, you know, you get hooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you were to speculate on like why your sister had more experience and was more into cooking than you, like what would your guess be?
Well, I mean, our family was always very, very close, but I think my sister spent a lot more time with my mom. I spent a lot more time with my dad. You know, not in the kitchen. So I think that was, you know, that was it. Again, it was a time of a lot more traditional roles than we have now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was just sort of what you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was guessing. It's not always the case. Not every family is the same. So that's why I kind of wanted to like learn a little bit about that. Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, even in my family, that was definitely more that way. Like, I mean, even though my mom is not, she's the type of person, she can cook, but she doesn't enjoy it. Like, she'll do it. She's good at it, but she doesn't really enjoy it. Like, she just, like, she had to do it. She learned it from her mother, kind of the traditional way, like, mom teaches daughter how to cook. But it wasn't really something that she enjoyed too much. She is actually more a baker to this day. So, is that something like happened in your family at all, like baking?
Baking, my mom did. I am not a baker. I think, I mean, baking is a little more scientific. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ingredients have to be measured out, and you know, the temperature has to be right, and all of those things. And as a result, you know, I've played with it, but I have never gotten a lot of that positive reinforcement that caused me to just want to go. So, I mean, it's fun. Don't misunderstand, but it's just not something that it's. Oh boy, this may not be a great example, but I always felt like the early cooking for me was sort of like a science experiment. Mm-hmm. Throw this, throw that, see what happens. Mm-hmm. And with the baking, you know, it can do that. Way too structured. Yeah, the most you can do is, okay, I'll throw a little cinnamon in here and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, if it's not well thought out, then the cinnamon burns and it tastes terrible and you throw the whole thing away. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it's something I've definitely seen. It's like there are two types of like experimental people. It's like the really scientific, like measure everything and follow everything step by step and make it reproducible and all of that. And then there's the, like, let's just throw something together and see what happens. And I mean, over time, like each side, like learns how to, like when to do what. Like on the real, like experimental side, I mean, you learn, like over time, you get like, you develop a palette and you develop like the tools and you know, okay, if I do this with that and this happens, and you like even things you have never done, you can conceptualize eventually and say, okay, this is most likely, this is going to happen. Like this is going to taste this way because like I've done like maybe something was somewhat similar and it like ended up this way. And on the other side, you have the like very scientific, very, very scientific way like of like following a recipe step by step and measuring everything. But eventually you get to a point where like, you can start introducing that variable and saying, okay, I like now that I have everything down and I know like how to make the perfect cake, I can start and say, okay, what happens if like I use this fruit or this spice or like whatever, like I take out this and put something else in. Like you can start introducing more variables and more like experimentation really. So like it's really like two paths to the same end result. But yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Like, yeah, and again, I mean, I think your comment about your mom was interesting, mm-hmm. because you can I think there are a lot of people that can even be good at this stuff, but mm-hmm. if you don't enjoy it, mm-hmm. then you know you're going to shy away from it, just like anything. Mm-hmm. And so I was really happy that I got that experience, mm-hmm. to, you know, not be afraid to go in the kitchen or to like, okay, now what do I do, mm-hmm. now? you know, I'm not sure that I,
yeah.
You know, if you wanted me to put together a turkey dinner, you know, I could probably do it. Might mm-hmm. not be – the presentation might be a little questionable at the end. But, I think it would taste fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and
yeah.
I mean, that was something that as our family got a little older, mm-hmm. Thanksgiving Day was always – everybody piled in the kitchen and helped prepare the turkey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's – I mean, my dad would do the stuffing and – you know, my sister and I would cut up the vegetables, and, mm-hmm. and it was a very family oriented thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those are a lot of very, very fond memories.
Mm-hmm. So like, that's actually very interesting. I think you're the first person where that happened that way. Like I talked to Melissa where it was more like her grandmother doing all the cooking. It sounds like in your family, it's more like my family, like more social cooking, like getting together is, I mean, not every day, obviously, but like on a weekend or like, I think like nowadays, Thanksgiving or like whatever other birthdays, special occasions, getting together and cooking together and having the social experience of like finishing the meal together and then eating together.
Yeah. I mean, that was usually something that was reserved. Well, boy, that's, you bring up a great point. It was definitely reserved for special occasions, mm-hmm. Christmas, Thanksgiving, New mm-hmm. Year's, those kind of things. But certainly during the summer, you know, there was that combination of, okay, grilling, mm-hmm. you know, one faction is outside grilling and doing that, and the other faction is mm-hmm. inside doing all the other stuff, and then everybody comes together.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting way to look at it.
Kind of makes me wonder, if you invite people over, like friends, do you cook with them? Or is that more like you cook for yourself and like they sit at the table and then like...
This is a little embarrassing. No, I don't cook for friends, and mm-hmm. I've gotten away from cooking just because I live alone, and mm-hmm. It's honestly a struggle after mm-hmm. a day's work.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you come home, you get it out of the refrigerator, you cook it, you eat mm-hmm. it, you clean it up,
mm-hmm.
it just becomes easier to go and pick something up somewhere mm-hmm. or eat somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I do miss that. And frankly, the lockdown that we've been going through here because yeah. of COVID-19 has brought some of that back. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. now I don't have to go mm-hmm. come home from the office and mm-hmm. do all that. It's, you know, everything's right here. So, you know, I've gotten back to doing a little more prep here mm-hmm. of my own food and mm-hmm. thoroughly enjoying it. And it's like, how did I get away from this?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so once the lockdown is over, whenever that is, however that is, mm-hmm. you know, I hope I can continue to maintain some of the enthusiasm for cooking. Mm-hmm.
That's really funny. Like last episode I had Beth, and like for her COVID and the lockdown was actually a way to even start cooking. Like she did a little bit here and there, but like for the most part she ordered out and she changed that, and now she's cooking a lot. And you're saying, well, I kind of got away from cooking before and now I'm back to it. So like it's super interesting to see that, like how an event like this changes even how you approach something as basic and as air quote simple as food and eating.
I think a big factor, at least for me, I won't speak mm-hmm. for her or anyone else, but mm-hmm. I think for me, it was just the timing mm-hmm. of things. If I wanted to fix something, sure, I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
But the trouble is you have to buy all the ingredients mm-hmm. and you never can buy just what you need. You have to buy the bottle or mm-hmm. the bag or whatever. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, unless you're going to do that same thing over and over mm-hmm. for a week, it all goes bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so economically, I mean, I know everyone says economically it makes a lot more sense to cook at home. And I agree, the more people you have,
yeah.
the more economic sense it makes. Mm-hmm. But if you aren't cooking a lot at home mm-hmm. and you're only cooking for one,
mm-hmm.
I think the economics, you know, swing back to a much more even number.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate just putting things in my refrigerator and then using it once, maybe twice, and then you have to throw it away. So.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably a big chunk of the food waste is like in the world as well. Like things like where you buy like too much because the sizes are sometimes too big, or like it just doesn't, like for vegetables, like it just doesn't grow any smaller. Like sometimes, right. I mean, like a lettuce, well, there might be smaller lettuce variants, but usually a lettuce is a certain size. And like, I mean, if you only eat half of it before it goes bad, then what do you do with the rest? Like if you don't have like a bigger family or have like whatever, some like a bunny or something that you can just give it to them. Like, yeah, I mean, what do you do with that? Like, there's no other choice than to throw it away. That's kind of like, it always bugs me as well. I mean, I've lived alone for like a long time. My family is still in the US, so like I'm alone here right now. And yeah, that's still, as you said, like it's an issue. It's definitely an issue. And it's easier to eat out than to like cook it for yourself. Especially if you don't enjoy it.
Right. Yeah. And well, there's a head of red cabbage right now in my refrigerator. It's like, okay, I've got to do something with this soon because pretty soon I'm not going to want to do anything with it. So, you know, but you go to the grocery store, it's like, yeah, you know, I haven't had that for a while and I can do this and I could do that.
Mm.
And then you come home and then, you know, you do something else. And it's like, oh, there it is. I got to get to it. And if you don't get to it, you know, well, then you've wasted the food and you wasted the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That's definitely it. When you were talking about like back in the day, like cooking more, also the people who like had to cook even if they didn't want to, I think that has fundamentally changed nowadays. Like there's more, I mean, with TV dinners, it was already more convenient. But nowadays, I mean, you can basically order anything. I mean, depending on where you are, like the access you have and the variety might be different, but I want to say at least in the Western world, most places you can order all kinds of food like to your doorstep for, well, depending on your perspective, reasonable price. So there is really less of a need to cook nowadays, I think, than there ever was.
Well, not only that, but and again, speaking as someone who came from a small town in rural Pennsylvania, the flavors and the diversity of ethnic cooking that has come. I mean, you know, now you as a kid, man, we never, you know, pizza was exotic.
True.
Know, we didn't have Mexican, and you didn't have Thai, and you had maybe a little Chinese, but you were never quite sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now, you know, that's just where it starts. And you can go to Ethiopian or Vietnamese and it's all great food.
Yeah.
But I know for me, it took me a little while to find my way into something as simple as I think of it now as Chinese, because you needed to find sort of a way in. You needed to find one dish. And it's like, okay, that's really good. I like that. So I'll try it. Like cooking. I'll try this over here or I'll try the next thing. Maybe that one didn't work out so well, but I'll try this.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty soon you acquire tastes for a lot of different things. And sometimes they take over the some of the top spots as your favorites that, you know, I never had as a kid, but now I thoroughly enjoy them and would miss them if they were gone.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even for me, like I remember, I mean, I'm somewhat younger than you, but I remember as a kid, like there was pizza. I mean, to be honest, here, 90% of all delivery is still pizza. Like all delivery services here is still pizza. Like it's everything pizza, and then like the occasional whatever Indian restaurant or Mexican or something else. So it hasn't changed that much here. But yeah, I mean, I definitely, like in Phoenix, for example, there was like, I mean, you could get anything you wanted. Like literally probably any part, like you would find something, even like if it was a little bit farther away, you would find something from any part of the world. Which was great. I mean, that exposes you to so many different approaches to like the same idea sometimes. I mean, that's something I've really enjoyed is like the what I call the peasant dishes, like the simple dishes, like with leftovers that you will find anywhere in the world. Like every cuisine, every area has their own version of it. Even here in Foodie Flashback, we've had a couple already. So it's like that's definitely something that we have more access to, I think.
And I think the COVID-19 situation is going to change a few things. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons pizza delivery is so popular is, first of all, it's a great, simple food, mm-hmm. but it travels fairly well.
Oh, yes, it does.
And there are foods that, and I'm not about to call out any restaurants, mm-hmm. local or chain, mm-hmm. but there are a couple, it's like, okay, I ordered from them, mm-hmm. and usually I'm not a big delivery person. I want to go pick it up mm-hmm. because and if they tell me it's going to be ready yet, mm-hmm. at 6 o'clock, I want to be there by no later than 5:50 mm-hmm. and wait for it so that I can get it as fresh as, mm-hmm. as it comes out.
Yeah.
Even then, there's some things like, okay, I did that once. I will never do it again mm-hmm. because it doesn't travel well.
Yeah. And
I think restaurants are going to have to come up with an idea that for some of their more popular dishes that don't travel well, mm-hmm. might be even just a little card that, okay, this is how, what you can do to it when you get it home mm-hmm. that will make it as good as it can possibly be.
Yeah.
Instead of, throwing something in and putting lettuce on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the lettuce wilts and everything is kind of soggy and it's like, ugh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. What I've definitely seen is that restaurants do build your own meal basically type of like approaches where like they give you all the pieces of it and everything is cooked and you literally just have to assemble it. But the assembly happens at your home, so nothing is soggy, like everything is still fresh and like they don't throw the lettuce in whatever the soup or the burger or whatever. Like they keep it separate and keep it cool and then like you literally do the last like 30 seconds of work but then you have something that is at least closer to the real thing. Happens with pizza as well. Like there are some pizzas that simply don't travel that well. Like if you have like rucola, for example, if you have that on your pizza, it's gonna wilt. Like any kind of leafy green is gonna wilt. Not a chance.
You just said something there that is I'm seeing a huge failure in the delivery places, mm-hmm. and that is they insist on putting the hot food with the cold food mm-hmm. in one bag.
Yeah.
And look, I get it. I mean, first of all, right now they're just trying to keep up and all that. Mm-hmm. But when you get it home and the hot food is no longer hot, mm-hmm. the cold food is no longer cold, it just completely detracts from the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And it makes me not want to go back. Mm-hmm. And so, whereas if they, and I get it. They can't put a refrigeration pack in, to keep things cool.
They could.
But at least if they separated it. Mm-hmm. If they separated it, yeah. it would be, mm-hmm. a huge mm-hmm. improvement. Just that would be so simple. Mm-hmm. But again, that's real easy for you and I to say because we're not there at that restaurant trying to shove all these orders out in a kitchen that probably was never designed for this kind of takeout situation that we're all looking for right now.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I mean, my wife used to do delivery. And for a couple of months, I joined her whenever I could. And I can tell you, some restaurants are better at it. Like some restaurants separate out the refrigerated parts from the hot food. So you can put the hot food in the hot bag and everything else can just stay in your car, which is usually fine. Like it's usually with ACs and everything, not too much of a big deal. Some of them even have little cooling packs or something in there. Just depends. So some restaurants have figured it out. I think it's just the ones I've seen usually are the ones that had that were more fast food or were more used to delivering anyway.
Yeah.
So they had more of an incentive.
Yeah.
I wanted to jump back to you cooking. How did you learn to cook? I mean, we were at the point you had to come home in the weekend, cook with your sister, cook with your family. How did you even learn? I mean, did you just work with your sister and she taught you some things? Did you just wing it, figure it out somehow?
Maybe a little bit of both, mm-hmm. probably a little more winging it than anything. Mm-hmm. I distinctly remember, and this is going way back, but there were cooking shows on TV when I was mm-hmm. a kid, mm-hmm. and even as when I was not so much a kid, that I always enjoyed. I enjoyed watching, and I think it was partially the showmanship of the guys that were doing mm-hmm. it, or ladies. Sorry, no sexism intended there. but it was always just something that, you know, appealed. And, but I didn't have a lot of time until there was a real necessity. So, you know, and then, you know, then the Food Network came along and all of a sudden, you know, you were for 24/7, 365, you could watch people cooking. Now, sometimes with ingredients and cooking things that I'm never going to, first of all, I'm never going to be able to get the ingredients. And second of all, I'm not sure I'd ever want to eat some of those things, but you know, it was still watching the preparation and how they approach things. And, you know, if like anything else, if you watch people and you're interested, you learn from them. And so I look back at you know, all that with a lot of fond memories and a lot of, it was fun. It's always fun to learn.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, kind of how I learned. I mean, I learned from my family, but it was also a lot of, as you said, cooking shows. I mean, Food Network was definitely one of my go-tos. Probably the channel I've like watched the most. Like, it's just like cooking all day. That was my thing. And like cooking in our family was very, very important. But I always wondered, like, I mean, how do people pick it up if they're not exposed to it from like, from the crib, basically? Like, how do you get to it? Because, like, not everybody like grows up and starts cooking with their grandma and at like age whatever 3-4 and then like takes it from there. Like sometimes it's people like you that like weren't really interested in it too much before and then like eventually just grew into it. And like, do you have any theory or any like any feeling why you even got interested in it? Was there something that was particularly interesting for you, or was it just something that just very slowly built up?
No, Patrice, I think it's like just about everything. You know, if you get a little exposure to it of some kind, you know, it becomes interesting and you pursue it. I mean, you and I are both tech people, but why did you get interested in tech? You know, well, I have no idea why, but, you know, it's been something that, as long as I can remember, no matter how primitive by today's standards it was, I was interested in it. And there were other things that just at when I grew up, cars should have been a much bigger thing than a lot of my friends and other people my age were into that just held no interest for me. So, you know, why, what is it about a particular thing that catches anybody's interest?
That's a good question. Know, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you hate to say it's all genetics, but
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a lot of exposure, as you said. Like, I mean, like your mom was cooking from scratch. Your dad was at least barbecuing. So like he was also to some extent, at least into food, like given the like traditional gender roles back then. He was still into food. Your sister picked it up. I mean, same thing. And like you were there and you were exposed to it from like very early age. And like at some point, yeah, you probably like if your family is excited about it, is interested in it, it's like not a guaranteed thing. But it makes it easier, I think, to get interested in it simply.
Yeah. And my dad, you know, I mean, so he didn't spend a lot of time in the kitchen, but, I mean, when we took my dad and I took a trip to his hometown in South Georgia, and I was exposed to, and he'd always brought, you know, some Southern things north. I mean, okay, I'm going to get in trouble here, Patrice, watch this. Here we go. But the Northern people here in the United States don't know how to make a good biscuit. go south of the Mason-Dixon line, and the farther down you go till you hit the Florida line, they know how to make biscuits. It's a small thing, but it's you know, it's just a perfect example of the difference. But, you know, and, you know, fried fish and hush puppies and my dad introduced us to the Southern honeys, Tupelo honey and gallberry honey, as opposed to the clover honey from Pennsylvania. And now I can appreciate clover honey, but, you know, for a long time, it's like, nah, I want the Southern honeys, man. you know, they were much, much better. So, and never could quite get to the collard green thing. Tried, couldn't quite get there. grits, I absolutely love grits. And that, you know, that slowly kind of spread out across the U.S. as a lot more acceptable.
Did, yeah.
But back then, you know, that was a Southern thing. And the northern people really didn't know what to do with it.
Well, I would still say that's still the case in a lot of times, like a lot of areas. Like, I mean, I've been to the north, to some states at least, and yeah, there is a like a southern restaurant here and there, where someone from the south moved up and like opened a restaurant. But for the most part, yeah, they don't know how to do that. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even travel to places like whatever Arizona, for example. Like even that doesn't work. So. I've tried.
And it's, you know, it's great because it just encourages you to try those cuisines locally, and then, you know, hope maybe you can find something close to it when you go home.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is also it's best when it's local. I mean, I'm not a traditionalist. I don't believe in like much in traditions, but I think there's something to, when it comes to food, there's something to the region or the like local food. Because I think it has something to do with like the area and what grows there and like sometimes the culture. And if you take that and take it somewhere else, it rarely ever works. Like, I mean, there's some exceptions, but I mean, I would argue that the pizza in Italy is better than the pizza even in the US, like anywhere. It is different. Like, I mean, there's good pizza in the US, but it's not Italian pizza. And depending on where you are and where you stand, like that might be something you expect differently, but it works because it was adapted. Because it was adapted to like the people there and to what's available. And like, I mean, yeah, you can import the flour and the tomatoes and everything from Italy. It's still not the same.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's some things that just, of course, now, I mean, well, if you're willing to pay for it, you can probably get just about anything delivered fresh. But, you know, first of all, it becomes cost prohibitive.
Yeah.
But there is something, and I almost think at times there's a mindset. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a lobster roll in Maine or on Cape Cod for some reason tastes a lot better than if it were in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, you know, and I think there's almost that mindset, but I'm with you. I think that that's what makes traveling, you know, fun. Food should be a big part of traveling.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know you have traveled quite a bit. So have I. And like, that's honestly for me, the most important thing. Like I've always, like the first thing I do when I hit the ground is look for like, hey, what's local, what's interesting, what like, let's go try it. And even if it's like something benign as like whatever, being in London and trying like a mince pie or something, it's still local and it's still good. And it's usually not expensive. That's the other part.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. Fast forwarding a little bit. So nowadays, like what kind of, like, I mean, you said you don't cook too much, but like what were at least until very recently. But what kind of things have you picked up over time? Like what are your favorite dishes or things you like to cook? Like even type of cuisine you like to cook?
Oh, I enjoy throwing steaks on a grill and experimenting with seasoning. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, we're kind of back to the crock pot or the roaster, you know, throwing something in. I enjoy working with meats, is probably the thing that I would say the most. You know, the rest is all kind of side dishes, but, you know, the main dish of the beef or the chicken. Mm-hmm. Pork too. Well, pork. Yeah. Pork too. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't worked as much with pork. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. But, you know, that's kind of where I prefer to, what I prefer to cook.
Why is that? Like, why, like what makes that interesting for you? Or like, why do you enjoy that so much?
Wow. I mean, I don't know, just I guess because of the variations that you can get from it, and there's something, you know, maybe it's, you know, caveman motivated. I don't know. It's just, you know, why did I shy away from baking? I can objectify why I shy away from baking, why do I enjoy the grilling and all? I think, well, see, it's so stereotypical to say that's something all guys Mike, because I'm not sure that's the case.
No, I don't think
but
so.
But it certainly is the case with me. And maybe it comes from doing it with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so maybe that's where it started. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Is it maybe also a little bit the, I want to almost call it magic that happens? I mean, it's not real magic. It's like honestly science. But I mean, you take like a humble piece of meat. You add some spices to it. It doesn't even look very like appetizing usually, like when you start out. But then over time, like especially on a barbecue or in a smoker or whatever, it like really transforms into something that is like really can be really amazing and can be really like delicious.
Never really thought about it that way, but that's a really, really good point.
Mm.
Because, you know, I guess when I look at a steak in the meat case,
mm-hmm.
I don't see the steak that's in the meat case. I see what it can be, what mm-hmm. it can or will become.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there may be something to that.
Mm-hmm.
And you can, even though the base is there, again, like you were saying, it depends on what spices you use,
mm-hmm.
or do you grill it? Do you bake it? Do you broil it? You know, and how do you prepare it that mm-hmm. can lead, give you so many different variations
mm-hmm.
with relative ease for that particular base piece of meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just something I've been thinking about, and I've also like observed in other people that there's something about meat. I mean, with vegetables, it's most of the time, it's like minimally changing them. Like, I mean, improving them here and there, adding some spices, adding some flavor, combining things. But for the most part, you try to keep the vegetable as is. Like, it might depend a little bit on the vegetable, but like, I mean, like baked carrots or whatever, like they kind of look the same as before. Might be like glazed, they might have a little bit more shiny, they might smell good, but like they still look like carrots. But with meat, it's more of a transformation. Like, as I said, like you take something that, I mean, some people might say looks disgusting. Like it's kind of, yeah, with beef, like it's red, it's bloody, and like has like the fat in it. And like, it kind of doesn't look like much. But as you said, like you look at it and you know what it's going to transform into. I mean, also your experience in this case, like, I mean, you've been doing this long enough that you know, okay, like this doesn't, this might not look like much, but it's going to be really good when it's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot to that. All right. Is there anything else you want to share? Like, I think we're good on time. Is there something?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess, you know, kind of going back to the traveling and the restaurants mm-hmm. and all,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would encourage you to, if you're going to travel somewhere, mm-hmm. stay away from the national chains,
mm-hmm.
you know, seek out some of the local restaurants, and mm-hmm. whether it's that little hole in the wall, which can, you know, serve some phenomenal food, or whether it's something more white tablecloth, but they specialize in the foods of the region or whatever. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's well worth the time to do that. And it adds another dimension to travel and another dimension to mm-hmm. your palate too.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid, you know, don't be afraid to try things. I know a couple of people that just, oh, I would never eat that. Well, there's some things I've tried that I would never eat again.
Yep.
No question about it. But I tried it. And then there are other things that I've tried and it's like, oh my God, you know, I can't wait to go back to that place. Either that mm-hmm. territory or geography or mm-hmm. just to that restaurant
mm-hmm.
and do that again because it was so good.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, try things.
Absolutely.
Try things.
No, I'm going to second that. The best, literally the best experiences I've had usually have been hole in the walls, random finds somewhere inside streets where like I just walked past something that looked interesting and then was like, hey, let's try that. There's a restaurant in Phoenix. I mean, you can find it like on Yelp or whatever, but if you walk down the street, you wouldn't even know. There's no sign. There's nothing. There's literally a door, like nondescript door on a street. And if you enter it, you enter what I call Mexican heaven, like really good, really good, very basic Mexican food. And yeah, it's like stuff like that, as you said, like, and No matter where you go, you will find something like that. Ask locals. Yelp is, even in like all over the world, I've experienced. Sometimes it's hit and miss. Like here in Austria, it's more hit and miss to some extent. Ask Google. You will find something. I mean, best is always locals. But you will find it, but seek it out. And it's definitely, it's also something I've heard from even professional chefs, like Anthony Bourdain's, Jamie Oliver. That's what they said. Like, I mean, they made the same mistake. They traveled somewhere, stayed at the hotel, ate at the hotel, never left the hotel. I mean, they were usually only there like 2-3 days. Just like us, if we're doing like business trip, I mean, we might not be there wherever we are for long. But yeah, and like the second they ditched that, and the second is, okay, I'm not gonna stay at the hotel. I'm just gonna go outside, go somewhere, find something. That's where the magic really happens.
Yeah. And, you know, I will share one other thing, that is sort of a cross between this discussion and our tech lives. Mm-hmm. But I started taking pictures of foods wherever I go. Mm-hmm. You know, at restaurants, my favorite foods. And now I have a collage of that up on my wall in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
cool.
You know, and with the iPhone, you know, you can get some really good pictures now. Mm-hmm. And I realize that some chefs and some restaurants view that as very gauche, but mm-hmm. I don't care. that's one thing. I'm paying the bill.
Exactly.
You know, I ordered this. I want to take a picture mm-hmm. of it. I'm going to eat it. I want to take a picture of it. Mm-hmm. And I've had more than one person walk into my kitchen and kind of like, well, what is all this? And it's like, well, every time I walk into the kitchen, you know, each one of those photos evokes a very positive memory. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The bad news is sometimes it evokes hunger. You want to go eat something, but you know, if I don't put up obviously pictures of food that I didn't enjoy, put up pictures of, and it goes from, you know, the before dinner drink to dessert and everything in between. And you know, I can tell you exactly where, maybe not when, but where those photos were taken, and you know, why I enjoyed it so much. And so it's a great way to sort of continue, you know, your evolution of things. There are things on that wall that, you know, as a kid, I would never have even thought about trying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now I count them among some of my favorite memories. So, you know, and you'll learn, you know, you might even learn a little about taking good pictures or editing them or, you know, making them look better printed. And that's not why we're here to talk about, but it is something that will help keep those memories alive. Mm.
Yeah, I have to do that more. Like, I always forget. Like, my problem is, like, I see the food, I get so excited about it, and then I forget about taking the photo.
Yeah, well, I've had a few of those, too. Sometimes it's like the person next to me has ordered something. Could I take a picture of your plate? And they look at you a little strange. Well, okay. And so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
All right, cool. We definitely have some topics for follow-ups. Like, already noted down a couple, like the foods that like you didn't like as a kid, for example. I definitely have to talk about that in some later episode. Thanks for being here. It was great. It was very interesting, very different perspective again, like more a southern view, I would almost say. Like kind of southern, northern, like both, a little bit of both. Can like tell people where they can find you, like if they want to reach out.
Sure. The podcast I do is macvoices.com. You can see everything where we talk to a lot of interesting people there, obviously primarily about tech and obviously primarily about Apple tech. And then Trek Favorites right now is on a bit of a hiatus only because of the COVID-19 thing and just being so busy at work that something had to give. But that will be coming back, and that's at trekfavorites.com. And probably the best way to reach out to me directly is on Twitter as at Chuck Joyner.
Mm-hmm. All right. You can find me and everything I do at thepatrice.com. You can find this very podcast on Twitter at foodieflashback and at foodieflashback.com. You will find also all the episodes, and if you're interested and you want to be in Chuck's place, kind of, and talk to me about your favorite foods. And I don't know why northern food is so much better than southern food. I don't know. You might have a different perspective on things, and you might have different stories how you grew up. Then, yeah, please reach out to me any way that you can. There's also a form in the show notes and also on the website that you can fill out if that's more your thing, or just send me a message on one of the many social media channels and we will set something up. And yeah, with that, thanks Chuck for being here. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.